Hello everyone, welcome back to the Education for Climate Talks. So today I'm very glad to have with me Deborah Rowe. Hello Deborah.
Hello.
So Deborah, I'm going to present you very briefly because you will have then the possibility to extend a bit the answer. You are the president of the US Partnership for Education for Sustainable Development, which is a body that gather leaders across countries, business, education, communities, and you help them strengthen all activities and sectors attain to the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. But you're also collaborating with 10 UN agencies on various issues, of course, very much linked to greening the workforce. But you're going to explain that better than me, for sure. So thank you for that. And could you please share with us a bit your journey into green education? We understand that you've been doing a lot of things. So please, the floor is yours.
Sure. Yes. Yeah, so some background on me. So I have been working on cleaner energy and climate solutions since 1977. In that year, I worked with at-risk teenagers, and we built solar collectors out of recycled materials, and we put them in public community centers, senior centers, government centers around the community so people could see that solar energy works. And that at least for space heating and water heating, these are things they could build themselves. And then in 1978, I visited communities around the region, half of the country actually, where they were trying to be self-sufficient in energy. And there was a lot of US Department of Energy funds at that time to learn about solar and green building. And I took some of those workshops. And then I came back to where I'm from, and I worked for a solar company. I did installation and design. I also did energy audits. I did sales. I opened up a new division for them. And then I opened up my own company. So this was on energy efficiency. We would tend to do senior citizen complexes, places where people were on limited incomes, so we could help them with their soaring utility bills, and also solar. And I ended up doing that retail and also wholesale. So I walked into the local college, a technical college, and I said, you need a program in renewable energies and sustainability. And they said, okay, we were interested in starting one. Let's see what you can do. I used the local media to make sure that we had open houses so we would have full courses, lots of students, lots of public calling for these courses. And started teaching in 1979 and taught renewable energies and sustainable development, energy management to heating and cooling students. The other courses were open to everyone, and also even had an online program in renewable energies and sustainable living. Taught at the college for 42 years. During that time, I also co-created the campus and corporate sustainability courses and taught them at the University of Vermont for a few years. Towards the end of those 42 years, a number of years was it with the University of Vermont for their specialized courses. Now, since then, and actually over the last 20 years, I've helped hundreds of colleges and universities start their own courses, their degrees, their community partnerships, upgrading their operations to be more sustainable, all the different dimensions. I'm not going to name them all. And have been on the advisory committee of AASHE since it started. So AASHE is the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Ed. And about 20 years ago, standing in one of the higher education buildings in Washington, D.C., I was trying to get to the chief executive officers of many of these associations. And to make those appointments, I realized we needed a title. So about 12 of us started the U.S. Partnership for Education for Sustainable Development, 20 years old now. And after running their higher ed division, became president. So I've been president for close to two decades. My international work started because the UN Decade of Education for Sustainable Development from 2005 to 2015, the UN was looking for a speaker from the US to describe what was going on in the US. And so I was privileged to be able to be multiple times the keynote speaker describing what was going on in the US. But the best thing was I got to meet people from around the world, learn from them, and create collaborations. So a couple of my more recent collaborations, and then I'll be done with the introduction. I worked with UNEP, the United Nations Environment Program, and we worked on education for green jobs. So I co-authored with them a global guidance document on education for green jobs. When you connect with the links from this event today, you'll see it there. And then also helped to form and work with HESI. HESI is the, you can see that in my background, it's the Higher Education Sustainability Initiative. And we are 10 United Nations agencies working with higher ed networks for sustainability, higher ed institutions, and key nonprofits that are catalyzing this work. So I run two of their action teams. One is Education for Green Jobs, and the other one is the Sustainable Development Goals Publishers Compact Fellows Program. And you'll hear more about both of those.
Super interesting. What a pioneer, really. I'm very impressed. So as you know, in Europe, of course, there's a renewed focus on the absolutely key issue of green skills, green competences, I prefer to say that, because of a Green Deal in the first place. But nowadays, right now, we just had the publication of a Draghi report that also clearly identified that there are skills missing, there is a skill gap regarding transitions with an S. So it's not just digital, it's also very much green. So there's a kind of an issue, of course, in the for what regards the greening the workforce. So based on your very long and amazing experience, could you share with us a bit the main trends you identified and the challenges also we face so that we can learn from that? Because as I said before, it's more than ever a very urgent and pressing question, please.
Yeah. So there are a lot of them. I'm only going to name a few. So one of the trends that I see, and I think we helped to create that trend with many others, is a recognition that there are three types of green jobs. So the first type of green job is the kind that you find posted on job boards. It's some people will use those postings to analyze what kinds of green skills or competencies we need, and people apply for those jobs. That's the first type. The second type of green job is the kind of job that doesn't exist yet, but needs to be created, and we need the entrepreneurs to do that. So during my career, energy managers at the beginning of my career did not exist. And a few people would walk into buildings and say, look, just hire me to do energy management for you, and I will take half of the savings. They made a lot of money, those people, because there was so much in terms of energy savings available. And of course, now energy manager is an established profession with very good pay. So that entrepreneurship into the new types of green jobs. But the third type of green job is my favorite, and that is a recognition that all jobs need to be green jobs, and to build into those jobs the responsibilities, the incentives, and the accountability to make sure that we are behaving in all of our jobs in a way that will build a green and sustainable economy. And so that's why we have an initiative you'll hear about in a little bit about how do you integrate it into the job descriptions and the performance appraisals. So that's one of the trends, is recognizing the types of green jobs. But there's another trend, which is that governments, and it's a challenge, governments are stating that we need green skilling and green competencies integrated into lots of different programs, from business to heating and cooling to psychology, you know, because all these fields have important contributions to make to building a green and sustainable future. But even though governments are stating this, it's not moving fast enough. The curricula isn't being updated fast enough. The instructors aren't being trained on how to teach it fast enough. And it's not being taken to the scale that we need. Another trend, which is a challenge, is there's a gap. There's a gap between those who are attending universities and they want green skills and competencies. As soon as they learn about our sustainability challenges and the sustainable development goals, which we would hope all students in higher ed would learn about, they also find out that these green competencies, some of them are only available at TVETs, at technical colleges, at community colleges. And so they literally cannot take the courses they need. If they want to go into, for example, energy management, grid design, solar installation and scaling of those installations so that they're community-wide. So we need more cross-institutional training opportunities where they're not in silos. And this has been a big gap for a long time between the universities and the TVETs, or what we call in the US, the community colleges. There's also a gap between the research and the practitioners and policymakers. And I'll be speaking to that more when I talk about tools that I have to help you with this. There is also a trend, which is a challenge, of having sustainability courses and degrees, but they are too abstract. Students come out, they can talk about what sustainable development is, they can talk about the sustainable development goals, but they do not necessarily dig into the details and learn the skills and the career pathways and the competencies. So when they come out, they don't have what the businesses need, what the governmental agencies need. So we need to get better at that, not only in the technical programs like engineering, engineering tech, heating and cooling, construction, automotive, but very much also in the other courses that might come out of sociology or psychology or business or even the humanities, who give us visions of what a sustainable vision of the future could look like. We don't have enough sustainability and green in our economics courses that are still running under old, outdated, and already proven by Nobel Prize winners to be inaccurate assumptions of how our economics work, and policy and law degrees as well. So another trend and a challenge is that educators and academic advisors are not connecting with employers enough to create the opportunities for job shadowing, for internships, for earn while you learn opportunities and apprenticeship opportunities, and also job placements. Those employers can be informing the curricula, and instead we have a lot of the high level talk about green and sustainability, but we need to get down to the levels of making sure these students are skilled and connected to career pathways and job opportunities. So that's what I would say. I found this to be international in the list of challenges that I made, and there are more, of course. There's a big challenge around, we need the money flows of our economic systems to go more towards setting up green and sustainability, not only in the actual projects, but also in the incentive systems for those who set up all of the supplementary things that we need, whether it be policies or financing, or, you know, there's so many different dimensions. I used to do a speech on what is a green job, and I would have 16 slides. And every single slide was full with the different types of jobs that are green jobs. I think our young people don't know about that. And if they did, it would really help to reduce their doom and gloom and to get them more engaged in solutions.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing these observations with us, because I think most of what you say apply very much to our situation here in Europe. And we understand that there's still a lot to do and bridges to build, etc. So precisely, can you share with us some solutions, some specific schemes, projects, tools?
Sure, of course.
These trends and challenges, please.
Yeah, of course. This is my favorite part of this presentation today, right? Is let's focus on the solutions, because the good news is that these solutions actually do exist. Okay, so let's dig into these solutions. And these are all on a resource list that I'm sharing with you that you can share out with the audience. In terms of education for green jobs, we have resources for you that came from solution summits, from a resources list, and a set of tools that were put into a toolkit. We went to the Clean Energy Ministerial. So that's the organization that reaches out to the clean energy ministers in countries around the world. And you can see from our work with them, a set of strategies, a design for building a coalition for workforce development, because people often will leave out key stakeholders when they do a coalition for workforce development for green economy, and also a compilation of policies and programs. So we have a toolkit for you. This toolkit was recently shared with participants from over 100 countries during this series of solution summits that had a focus on workforce development policies and programs for an inclusive and equitable clean energy transition. So just to give you a taste of the resources, there's a self-assessment process that anybody within an educational institution can use. It's called Greening TVET tool, but it doesn't have to be just for TVETs. It's supported by the International Labor Organization and its work in multiple countries for green economy workforce development. You'll find there my global guidance document that I wrote with UNEP on education for green jobs. And there are many other useful documents on the resources list. On the toolkit that you will find there, the toolkit says you don't have to be in a certain part of the hierarchy of the government to set up a coalition for greening the workforce. Anybody can do this, can convene the different stakeholders, or find where they're already convening and see if there's groups missing. You can weigh in. So I come from a family where my mother set up the first program in Detroit for pregnant women and children where there were no food programs. And she didn't fit into the formal hierarchy at all, but she went and got warehouses and the government food that was just sitting there spoiling and created a nonprofit. And that was 40 years ago, and that program still exists. So the hierarchy is made up, you know. And when things need to happen quickly, like they do now for a green and sustainable future, you can find your power. And I'll give you additional tools to do that, to create the systems change we need. Because the next set of links I have to share have to do with becoming a change agent for a green and sustainable future. See, you can see how students have come together in large coalitions to develop the curricula that they found was missing in their education. The emphasis seems to be for them on moving beyond the doom and gloom of climate change to learning how to be change agents within our societies. So the graduates can take to scale the solutions we need. And oftentimes they actually work on projects while they're in their courses that are real world projects. So for example, there is a free certificate called Become an Environmental Changemaker. And the modules that make up that certificate are freely available to all educators to utilize. And they include things like how to create systems change, how to cope yourself with the doom and gloom of climate change, how to communicate effectively to identify leverage points for large changes, and then to make them happen effectively. Multiple modules, stories of effective change makers. So that's one resource I have for you. Another one was created with a U.S. Department of Energy grant a few years ago, and it's a coalition of STEM academic societies, and it's about integrating sustainability into programs and curricula in all academic areas. It's called Sustainability Improves Student Learning, because we have academic papers that show that if you do this, it actually improves the learning of students. But it's got to focus on key components of quality sustainability assignments, like focus on solutions and engage students in implementing them so they can practice being change agents. And it also has a whole section on student empowerment to help students become sustainability change agents. Another set of tools we have for you is how do you institutionalize sustainability in a lot of formal and informal education settings. And we don't want to forget the informal education because it's so important as well to be inclusive. We have champions who champion green and sustainability, but we need to go beyond that and make it the norm. So to institutionalize these efforts across all areas, we have a network that we've run out of the U.S. partnership of national and international mainstream higher ed associations. It's called the Disciplinary Associations Network for Sustainability. We have 45 academic societies all working together to integrate sustainability into curricula, but they also have an initiative on integrating it into job descriptions. Remember I said every job is a green job? So they've got materials for you on that. Integrating sustainability into job descriptions and performance reviews. And this was first done in the US in universities. Cornell University was one of the leaders in this, but now we're seeing it happen in all sectors of society. So it builds into government and business and nonprofits and many others. Integrating sustainability and specific green skills topics, like heat pumps, like building energy efficiency, and so many others, into textbooks is really important, into the materials that are the default materials that educators are using. And so we've had a project around that, finding the best-selling materials that reach the most people and then getting these materials in. We also have some resources for you on what are the key competencies that anybody working in sustainable development education, including pathways to accreditation. What are those key competencies? And so there's this wonderful Global Council for Science and the Environment Sustainability Education Program that has looked at the published academic literature. And we've really come to quite a consensus across countries on what are the key competencies. So you'll find that in that resource. A lot of good work going on there. Now then, we have to have networks. Networks across institutions. How silly if we leave it to each institution to have to do this work alone and recreate all of these efforts. So for 20 years, there's been this effort to integrate sustainability into the core professional development offerings as part of the norm for not just faculty, our educators, but also our staff in higher education, also secondary education, what we call high schools, not as an extra, but as part of your regular job to build in those green competencies and those sustainability competencies. So we have through the US partnership, HEASC, and I give you the link to that. It's the Higher Education Association Sustainability Consortium. It's made up of facilities directors, student life coordinators, presidents or rectors, as you call them, vice chancellors, many other roles in higher education. They come together every 2 months and we talk about how to do this work, and we've been doing it for 20 years. So we have resources there. And I already mentioned DANS, which is the 45 academic societies. And between the two of them, there's details, there's resources for all academic, operational, and other staff areas. Now, look, this isn't the only resource. I know that many other organizations have additional resources. I'm just giving you some. And please don't let perfection get in the way of progress. I know there's a lot out there now, but we need to get moving. We're on a very tight timeline, according to the science-based targets, to try to take our last opportunity to stabilize climate, or at this point, prevent the worst impacts of climate change. Okay, just a few more, and then I'm done with my resources. The Higher Education Sustainability Initiative. This is the background that I'm using today. This collaboration of 10 United Nations agencies and higher education institutions and networks for sustainability. That work includes academic research and educational materials becoming more aligned with the sustainable development goals. so we have better implementation of solutions to our urgent societal challenges, particularly in this climate space, because our timeline is so short at this point. We procrastinated and denied it for so long. This initiative also has a focus to create better connections between academics, including academic publishers, with practitioners and policymakers and their organizations. You know, practitioners and policymakers oftentimes don't access all of the wonderful academic research that's being done on the transition that we can make to a green and sustainable future. So there's a group called the SDG Compact Fellows. The UN Publications Office and the head of the International Publishing Association created a publishers compact, and well over 200 academic publishers have signed. But it doesn't matter if they sign, if we don't bring along the researchers, the journal editors, the educators, all of these different groups that feed into our setup, our culture of how we educate. So the HESI's SDG Compact Fellows have created very practical and just recently launched with updates, top action tips. And I am sharing for you in this resource list a University World News article that describes the importance of the top action tips. Let me just give you one example, because the practitioners and policymakers are not getting the information that they need that academia is creating. Imagine if we required that in all journal articles, implications for practitioners and policymakers was included in the abstract. And that if somebody had an article that was approved, there would also be the requirement to just put in a plain language summary that then could be shared out with practitioner and policymaking organizations. You know, a typical practitioner has to pay $30 to $50 or euros to access an article. And if it doesn't say in the abstract or with a plain language summary what its impacts are, they're not going to purchase it. Or they purchase a number of articles and they're the wrong ones. They're not the ones that have the most valuable information. So these real gaps that we have between academia and real world problem solving is what the SDG Compact Fellows are addressing through the top action tips. And it also, researchers who want to do this work in green and sustainable economy and inclusive clean energy transition and green competencies and integration, this shows them how they can do it and get credit for their career pathway. So a lot of good stuff there. And then finally, HESI, this November, we are convening accreditation agencies globally. So these are the agencies that approve programs or majors or institutions of education. And we are convening them to talk to them about including sustainability and green skilling criteria into their accreditation requirements. So we're using examples where that's already occurring, like in engineering and business schools. It's occurring in a number of academic areas, but it needs to occur in more and with more quality. So if you're working with any kind of accreditation organization, or you have to respond to an accreditation organization or their standards for a curricular program that are not yet including sustainability and green skilling as criteria, let us know. Give us their information. We will invite them to this convening, and you can send us that information at Green Jobs Collab. That's Green Jobs, C-O-L-L-A-B, at gmail.com. So that's the list. Now, you may have questions on this, or you may want me to share some additional things, but that's what I had for you today.
Thank you so much, Deborah. What a plaidoyer for breaking down silos, working together, giving access to knowledge, open access, by the way, for scientific publication, certainly. I want to thank you very much for all that, and to tell the audience that we will share all the links you shared with me in the description of the video so they can have access to these amazing, really, resources. And I would like to even thank you more for giving us hope and stamina for working together and turning into concrete actions, which is the most important thing, what we're raising sometimes at too high level. So thank you so much for that, Deborah. And we can follow up the discussion on the platform with the community members. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for this wonderful platform. There's so much to learn there. Appreciate it.